Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition. I always say it's morning someplace in the world. So good morning to you. It is another episode of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. I would like to begin by saying that every show is a Quest moment, and our intentions here are to make waves. That being said, a cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium, and all vibrations possess a wave nature. In our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our airwaves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. So good morning, everyone. We have a great show lined up for you with some explanations from last show where we actually talked about voting. And so this morning we're going to start as soon as Mr. Harris chimes in by beginning our first segment of Chains of Events. We also intend to have a special guest with us, former mayor of Irvington, New Jersey, Wayne Smith. He is going to provide us a clarification of the ballot questions that we're going to have to answer here in the state of New Jersey in November, along with the presidential election. You see, many times we don't understand the referendum or extra agenda questions on the ballot. And so he's here to help us clarify that. And to make it simple in layman terms. And so that being said, I would like to, without any further hesitation, invite Mr. Harris. Mr. Shelton Harris, good morning.
Good morning. How's everyone?
Great.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning, Val.
Good morning.
Excuse me. Yo, excuse my late arrival, but I'm here now. Okay, we're going to start out with a chain of events, because a lot of times musicians, the good ones, I believe, always kind of, their music reflects the times and the actions and the events and stuff that are going on while they were doing it. And this is an ongoing and a long tradition. And the person that I looked at that was really good at that was named Nina Simone. And her song that we're going to review today is it's called Mississippi Goddamn. And I'm sure she meant every word of it. It goes, Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn. Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much, much longer. Someone say a prayer. Hound dogs on my trail. School children sitting in jail. Black cat crossed my path. I think everyone's. Every day is going to be my last. Lord, have mercy on this land of mine. We got to get it in due time. I don't belong here. I don't belong there. I haven't stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me. I'll tell you. Me and my people are just about due. I've been there, so I know. Keep on telling us to go slow. But that's the trouble. Do it slow. Washing the windows. Do it slow. Picking the cotton, do it slow. We're just rotten, do it slow. You're too damn lazy, do it slow. I'm thinking you're crazy, do it slow. Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know, I don't know. Just try your very best, stand up and be counted like all the rest. For everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Picket lines, school boycotts, they try to say it's all a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sisters, my brothers, my family, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears, to talk real fine and act like a lady. Then you'll stop calling me Sister Sadie. But this whole damn country is full of lies. We're all going to die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. You keep saying, go slow, go slow. But that's just the trouble. Do it slow. Desegregation. Do it slow. Mass participation. Do it slow. Reunification. Do it slow. Do things gradually. Do it slow. But bring more tragedy. Do it slow. Why don't you see it? Why don't you feel it? I don't know. I don't know. You don't have to live next to me. Just give me my equality. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn. At the time when she wrote this particular song, it was a reference to the killing of Mega Evers in Mississippi. And the Alabama she was talking about, because at the same time that Mega Evers got killed, that's when those four little girls got killed in that church in Birmingham, Alabama. So this was one of her protest songs, which she wrote a few. And I always liked it, because even when I heard it as a child, at first I just liked it because she said goddamn a lot. Then when you really get to listen to the words, you know, I'm just trying to be real, you know. But then once the words, and then you find out what she was talking about the school children sitting in jail, you know, that's when they had those little, the children's march in Alabama, because everybody used to see the pictures of the hoses and stuff sprayed on people in the park. Everybody thought those were sprayed on adults, and those dolls were being sicked on adults. Those were high school students that was being, like, trampled on and beat by the police and stuff and thrown in jail. You know, and she was really good at expressing herself in the things that was going on around her, because she felt those things very deeply. All right?
So as you transition into, well, is that the total two segments together?
No, well, that was just my question.
Okay, but my question right now is, you have some more background information about Nina Simone as it pertains to where she lived and kind of had an opportunity to experience some certain people. Could you elaborate on that?
Right, yeah. Well, that was really the curtains that we were going to be working on today, because curtains just tells you a little bit more about the public persona of people and what they were really about behind the scenes. So a little bit of background on Nina Simone is that, first, she was born Eunice Wayman in February 1933. She took to music at an early age, learning the piano at age 3, and was singing in her church. She always wanted to be a classical pianist, so her training in piano was as a classical pianist. She wanted to be the very first major African-American pianist. So a fund, the people in her community got together and put some money together so that she can go to the Juilliard School in New York to train. But they didn't really, they let her get in, but once they found out what she wanted to do, it was like, well, you know, your people don't do stuff like that. So after a little while, she left Juilliard and moved with her family in Philadelphia. And she tried to get into the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia as a classical pianist, but they wouldn't let her in for the same reason, that she was black. So eventually she turned away from her dream of being a classical pianist and start playing jazz and blues in Atlantic City in the 50s. And, you know, before long, she starts singing along with the music, you know. And just where she got her name from, Nina Simone, one of her old boyfriends used to call her Nina, that Spanish name for Nina. That's with a, like a female friend. And the Simone came from a French actress, you know, that she knew of, named Simone Signore. You know, and she was influenced and was around a lot of people that were happening at the time. She was friends with Langston Hughes, Lorraine Hansberry, James Baldwin. You know, so she was down with a lot of heavyweights in the Renaissance and Civil Rights Movement. You know, she recorded her first album called Little Girl Blue back in 1957, and the only record that was a hit on that album was I Love You Porgy from the Porgy and Bess play by the Ira and George Gershwin. You know, she, in many ways, her music defied like a lot of standard definitions because she was trained as a classical pianist. No matter what kind of music she plays, that part of her repertoire really kind of stood through. You know, she was often called the High Priestess of Soul, but she hated that nickname. And she didn't like jazz singer either. She once said, if I had to be called something, it should be called a folk singer, because there was more folk and blues than jazz in my playing. You know, she grew up where she lived in Mount Vernon, New York, and her neighbors were Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz, where she learned and was influenced by a lot of the civil unrest and stuff at the time from them. She lived in a lot of countries around the world, Switzerland, Liberia, England, Barbados, and she finally wound up living in the south of France. You know, she recorded a lot of music, you know, and her career kind of made a bounce in the 1980s when the Chanel No. 5 perfume company used her song My Baby Just Cares For Me. And it became a commercial hit in the United Kingdom. And she wrote a couple books, I'll Put a Spell on You, which was published in 1999, and A Single Woman that came out in 1993. She toured all around the world. She even played at Nelson Mandela's 80th birthday party in the same year in 1998. She was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she died in 1970. She died at the age of 70 in 2003. You know, she influenced a lot of performers like Aretha Franklin, Joni Mitchell, Lauryn Hill, Michelle Indignatello. She had documentaries written about her. She had the one called The Amazing Nina Simone, and the other one was What Happened to Nina Simone. And the one, it was kind of controversial, the one What Happened to Miss Nina Simone, because they had that actress Zoe Saldana play her with like some kind of blackface. It was really, really kind of crazy. But in 2016, they found her house that she used to live in, and they were getting ready to demolish it. So a couple of artists got together and bought the house so that it wouldn't be demolished. And a couple of years later, the National Trust for Historical Preservation designated that house as a national treasure, which protected it from demolition, and people are still trying to restore it for use in like a library and a remembrance of the great Nina Simone.
When you talk about that movie, a lot of times we use the word crazy to describe something, but that's not exactly what we mean. When you talk about that movie, give me a better description other than the word crazy to describe what you're talking about, that biopic on Nina Simone.
Yeah, well, it was more controversial because a lot of people were talking about that there were a plethora of black artists that had, because she was, Nina Simone, for one, was very proud of her African features, her nose, her big lips and stuff like that. She was very proud of the way she looked. She wore the natural hair and stuff like that. And the controversy came when they picked Zoe Saldana, which is a Hispanic sister, you know, to play her in the movie. And in order to do it, they had to put all kind of prosthesis and stuff all over her. And a lot of people from the black artistic community, at least, made a big stink about this. And then they were talking about all the different people who could have played it just as well as she played it, but more naturally, like in the spirit of Nina Simone, a little more. That's what I meant by crazy. It was just something that that caused the controversy, whether it was intentional or not.
Okay. So let me put it in straight terms. The controversy was basically around, was she black enough?
Right.
Yep. Am I right by saying that?
Yeah, right. You know, but see,
we have that same controversy today
about people who are supposed to be black enough.
Exactly. And that's why I said it just like that. You know, on Wednesday, I said that, you know, we all came from one place, but we were dropped off on that same boat. We were dropped off different places. So we still brothers and sisters. And the thing is, we have to realize that. And news alert, Hollywood does it the way Hollywood sees it. That's why it's called acting and performing. You might not like it, but that's the way it goes down. And that being said, I'm going to transition into the word, which I'm not going to define, but I'm going to talk about apathy real fast. Because coming up, momentarily, we have our guest, Mayor Wayne Smith. And before him, we're going to have Val on the line to talk about early voting in the state of New Jersey. So let me just start by saying there's a lot of things that I've seen online on social media as it pertains to being apathetic towards the election coming up in November. And for me, in my view, it's just sheer ignorance. Some people say, and it goes like this, yeah, I know our ancestors died for us to vote, but tell me, what am I getting? Well, let me tell you what you won't get by voting. An opportunity to complain, all right? What you won't get is an opportunity to walk around and say somebody owes you something. But let me just be clear. All politics is local. So for those who participate, those that might be in the middle trying to decide, don't listen to anybody. If it wasn't so important, there wouldn't be so many obstacles placed before us to keep us from not being able to participate. That being said, I'd like to transition and bring on Val. Val, could you go through briefly the early voting or voting by mail right now? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes. And as I had read before, you would go to the website, the Essex County website, where you would request a ballot to be mailed to your home, and then that ballot is filled out and it's mailed in, just like you did for the primary, and it's mailed in. But there's been, you know, different reports. Some said that the ballots are coming out automatically, but just to ensure that you do get yours, it doesn't hurt to request it as well.
Okay. And it doesn't have to necessarily be mailed in. It could also be dropped off at the county clerk's office. Is that correct?
Hold on. Let me go through the places. Okay. Deadline for in-person mail-in ballot applications for the general election is by 3 p.m. on November 2nd. Let's see. That's if you're bringing it in person. And then it says November 3rd is deadline for post office receipt of mail-in ballots from the general election. Deadline for in-person submission of general election mail-in ballots to county boards of elections. So, you know, they have a lot of deadlines here, you know, a little different language on each one. But it looks like here November 2nd is for your in-person mail-in ballot.
And I think the date for registration ends on October 27th.
Let me check that for you.
In the state of New Jersey, I believe. You know, because I have nothing else better to do but to walk around with this in my head.
Voter registration deadline for general election is October 13th.
Oh, 13th. So I was wrong. Okay. But at
20,
least I got
21 days. 21 days before the election.
Okay. Mayor Wayne Smith, are you on the line?
I am.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's everyone?
Well,
good.
Thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Good. And just as an add-in, I think you can also vote on Election Day. You can fill out a provisional ballot. There will be certain places that will be open. So you have to pay attention when they release that information where you can actually, if you want to go vote, you can vote, but it will be called a provisional ballot.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So
now,
you can vote in. You're going to be allowed to vote in person, but every voting site will not be open.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have to pay attention because this could change as we speak.
Right. You see, and that's the problem. There's been so many changes.
Yeah, they can move from
confusing.
limited sites to maybe opening up every site because there is a push. And these are county-driven, so every county, the governor is trying to make everybody do the same thing, but I think he's allowed some flexibility, and there will be some in-person voting, but it'll be by what they call provision. You'll fill out a form to vote and then turn it into the election people or a box there at whatever site they have.
Now, are you filling out that form in advance, or they have the form there?
No. They'll have you can if those who choose to vote in person that day, they will have those forms there. They're called provisional ballots.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mayor, also there is a constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Yeah, there are three.
Well, the one in particular that I saw, which is confusing, it's the constitutional amendment to change the legislative redistricting.
Right. Yeah. So let me talk about that one first. So, and this is a great civic lesson for us all because it makes us understand that those little lessons we learned in school what they mean. So let's just start out with a constitutional amendment. So most of us are more familiar with the United States Constitution. But most states, if not every state, has their own constitution as well, because there are certain powers that are delegated to only the states, like voting.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, we elect a state legislature in New Jersey. You have state senators and you have the state assembly, and they're broken down into districts. I live in District 28, which is Irvington, parts of Newark, et cetera. Seton Hall University, I think, is in 27, which includes South Orange, West Orange, Roseland, and a number of other towns. So each counting of the census, New Jersey Constitution requires that by the year ending in 1, so in this case it would be 2021, on February 25th, that all the census data has to be taken into account. And remember, every Senate and Assembly district has to have the same number of people. So some areas will drop population and some areas will gain population. And so they have to redistrict so that every district in New Jersey has the same amount of people, so that representation is equal. So that means towns could shift. You'll be in a, you'll be in a district right now, but after they finish the census and do the count and redistrict, you may be in another district for just for the purposes of the state legislature. So right
now,
when
you say mayor, I'm sorry. When you say another district, that's another city.
Not another city. So what legislative districts are, and I was talking to Richard earlier before on air. He mentioned the word gerrymandering.
Okay.
Districts are broken up. So you could be like Newark. Newark is not one Senate or Assembly district. Newark is a part of a number of Assembly districts. So like the West Ward of Newark is a part of my Assembly district. And so it's Irvington, the West Ward of Newark, some parts of the Central Ward. So they get down to where they take neighborhoods and attach it to make up an Assembly district. So like a city like Newark is not in one district because it's so big. It has so many people. So you could be in, and you could live in the same city but be part of a different legislative district. And so every 10 years after the census is done, on the odd year, the year beginning with one, on February 15th, they have to have those districts drawn. Now, this is why it's important we pay attention to current events and know a little bit about our government. So right now what is going on is they're doing the count for the census. And, in fact, the most of the urban cities, and particularly in New Jersey, Newark, Irvington, East Orange, they're having terrible results. Now, people are on the ground going door-to-door now trying to get those numbers out. The Trump administration had first authorized for them to go until, I think, October, but they cut a month off. They want everything done by September. And now some people think, and I'm one of them who thinks that he was trying to mess with the election and so that they don't have an accurate census count. So with all this mass confusion, this is my commentary now, that the Trump administration is doing. So they may not have all the census numbers correct by February 15th. And if they don't, this constitutional amendment says hopefully we'll have all the data by March 1st and March 1st of 2022, and that's when the districts will be drawn. So they're amending the Constitution so that the districts that were supposed to be drawn by 2021 will move to 2022. And they can't do it just by we're going to change the schedule. It has to be an amendment to the Constitution, and they have to take that to the voters of New Jersey. So that's why they're going through this process. So government functions, everything affects everything else. And that's why it's important that we pay attention to all this stuff, because most people don't even know we have a New Jersey Constitution and that there are certain powers delegated to the states. And until you have these constitutional questions. The other two questions on the ballot are dealing with property tax deductions for veterans who have not served. They call them peacetime. They have not served in war. So they want to have a special deduction of $250 off the property taxes for peacetime veterans. And for disabled peacetime veterans, which means they were not disabled as a result of a war, but they are disabled, they want to give them 100% exemption. And that exemption will pass on to the widow. So even the question of property taxes are based on our state constitution. And so any changes to these kinds of tax laws has to be done by constitutional amendment, and they have to take that all amendments have to be taken to New Jersey voters. So that's the other amendment that's on the ballot. Number three is the one that everybody's been talking about. And so that's why even if you don't don't like who's running for president, all that. There are other things that you do with voting, like these three questions. So even if you don't like no candidates and you want it to impact society, so here's the one that has been major debate in our community, the legalization of marijuana. So there's been many debates pro and con about that. I'll try to stay away from that discussion because now the state legislature, by their powers, could have done this themselves. They did not. They could not reach consensus. There were some people who were against it, and it wasn't enough votes there to get the thing passed in the state legislature. So in that case, they, in order to do it, they wanted to put a constitutional amendment approved by the voters to allow legalization of marijuana. Now, here's the parameters of the debate. So some people view it as a social justice issue. So many urban kids in particular, African-American and Latino young people, and even some older people who may have had small quantities of marijuana have records where they cannot maybe get certain kinds of employment because of that record, because they had this small quantity of marijuana. So legalization for those who support it would help those people not have a criminal record. And so that's the social justice argument. And so this constitutional amendment, when it becomes legal, you would have to be age 21, and they will set up a cannabis regulatory commission, which will then this constitutional amendment will allow that commission to be set up, and then they will determine the regulations or how the marijuana industry will be run, how it will be taxed, and all of that. So that's what that constitutional amendment does. Now, I remember Senator Rice was one of the chief opponents against it, and his argument was that, and I went and testified at a hearing in Elizabeth. I didn't come because it was on a fast track. I thought because of the money involved and because they'll be able to tax that they were going to fast track it. But my concerns were, as a New Jersey resident, okay, if you legalize this, what impact will it have on my auto insurance? We already have enough DWIs. And what's the science around this question? So that's part of the debate. We're past that. But the voters of New Jersey will be able to decide whether or not marijuana is legal or not. So those who say, the brother, he shouldn't have been locked up, he only had a joint on him, by your vote, you can have something to say whether that person gets locked up or not, and whether that person has a record, or it becomes decriminalized. So those who argue that, make that argument, you have an opportunity to weigh in on that, because this constitutional question is on the ballot. The state legislature did not use their powers, which the people have delegated to them, so they kind of didn't do their job in that respect. They punted it back to the people. So the people then can have a choice whether or not marijuana becomes legal or not. So those are your three constitutional questions on the ballot.
Oh, wow. And the information is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people skip these ballot questions.
Exactly.
A lot of people do, and I give you another example. What just happened recently around Governor Murphy's budget? He just got authorized by the state Supreme Court to spend almost $10 billion in emergency preparation, the bond to go out in the credit markets and raise $10 billion to make New Jersey's budget whole. $10 billion. Now, the state constitution requires when you do bonding, which is a financial vehicle, you go out and you sell bonds and you use the proceeds from those bonds to fund your government. You have to take that to the voters. Because of the pandemic, it's an emergency situation. He wanted to just do it by the legislature. The Republican Party, mostly Republicans, said, no, you got to take that to the voters. I think there was a lawsuit with Governor Whitman over this. They went to the Supreme Court to deny. So the Supreme Court said the nature of the pandemic and what has happened to the economy, we're going to let the governor go ahead under the emergency provisions to go ahead and do this bond financing. So there are times there are questions on the ballot, like the rebuilding of schools a few years ago. That was a question on the ballot, and you got some new schools built in New Jersey. They couldn't do the financing of those schools unless the New Jersey voters spoke to that. So Richard is correct that people who don't want to vote or don't want to participate in voting, there are a number of reasons to participate in voting that have nothing to do with which candidates you like or don't like. And so if you don't participate in the process, these important questions that affect your pocketbook, that affect your quality of life, they're going to be on the ballot. So if you don't vote, you miss your opportunity to. And so particularly for young people who say, well, you know, the legalization, you have an opportunity to say, have something to say about that. And whether we agree or disagree, that's what the democracy is about.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I cannot thank you enough.
Right.
You know, I have to be honest, this is not going to be my last time ranting about apathy in our community. And I just think we, you know, some of us are falling for the banana in the tailpipe. I truly believe that, you know, and with no understanding of civics as it pertains to your participation. Right, a total disrespect for people who made sacrifices before us. And I can just go on, and I'm going to stop right there. You know, we have a student host. Walter, are you there?
Yes, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, good
Walter,
morning.
Good morning.
Walter, I have to turn it to you. Man, what do you think about today's show so far, Walter?
I'm loving all the new information, or I shouldn't say new, because it's information that people probably heard of, but they haven't paid much attention to, and that has to do with the voting. I like how he talks about how people don't know, like, certain things, like the U.S., like, there's different constitutions for each state. Some people just, like, they don't pay attention to that. And, you know, I just really enjoyed all the information he brought to the table today.
Wait a minute. What you think about Mr. Harris and his Nina Simone piece?
Yeah, you know, I like the concept. I like how she was able to relate the situation with the Alabama, with the four little girls in the church, and also Magna Everest in Mississippi. I like how she was able to write a poem about it to get like a visual aspect and also just give a message out to people watching it. I mean, not watching it, but reading it, of the deeper message about it all. And I like that selection he picked.
Okay. And I know you're still too young to vote, but what do you think about voting? You engage with some young people. Do they seem interested in the electoral process?
I mean, I guess, like, more like this generation, really, I think it's, like, they're more interested in politics, because I can see from, like, both sides, from the conservative, like, certain view. I don't, like, of course, I don't support that, but, like, it's, like, the two different parties, the Republican and Democratic. I see a lot of kids, like, around my age who participate and, like, have, like, social media pages for those certain parties, like, promoting those certain parties and talking about those politics. So I'm believing, like kids, like, in this generation, they're really interested in politics. And, you know, something I actually thought about that we've, like, talked about and debated in school is, like, lowering the voting age to 16, because a lot of kids in today's generation are really promoting and pushing it. And even though some people might think it might be too young, but 18 is not that far from 16. And starting early and having a 16-year-old's point of view about voting for their future, because it is our future, and we want to vote to put things for our future in place. So, you know, we was talking about that in school, and yeah.
Wow, I'm glad I asked that question. We're going to table that for the moment, right? And I want everybody to sit back, relax. You need me to read any introductions or anything?
No.
You know, make some waves, Walter.
All right. So, for the first segment of today, for the first diamond of today, it will be Mary Church Terrell. And the intro for diamonds is, history is like a diamond. Prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. And again, today's diamond is Mary Church Terrell. In a period of American history when most people felt that blacks and women were intellectually inferior to white men, Mary Eliza Church proved them wrong time and time again. The daughter of Robert Church, a former slave, Mary graduated from Oberlin College in Ohio in 1884. She majored in the classics, considered at the time a gentleman's course of study. 4 years later, she earned a master's degree in higher mathematics and went on to study abroad. A strong women's rights advocate, Mary believed that women should work if they wanted to. Her father did not. He disinherited Mary because she went to Wilberforce, Ohio, to teach. When Mary married Robert Terrell, a judge, she moved with him to Washington. She was later appointed to the city's Board of Education. She was the first black woman in the United States to hold such a position. In 1892, a lynch mob murdered one of Mary's friends. President Benjamin Harrison refused Mary's request to condemn lynching in an annual message to Congress, thus being Mary's lifelong battle against racism and sexism. Mary and white suffrage leaders Susan B. Anthony and Jane Addams campaigned tirelessly to win passage of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which gave women the right to vote. Then, during World War I, Mary helped organize the Women's Wage Earners Association to improve conditions for black women. Later, she helped form the National Association of Colored Women, NACW, and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP. Up until the day of her death, Mary battled racial injustice. In 1940, at the age of 77, she wrote her autobiography, A Colored Woman in a White World. Later, when the American Association of University Women refused to admit black women, Mary, at age 86, began a three-year fight to change that policy. At age 90, Mary Church Terrell could still be found leading picket lines to end segregation in restaurants in Washington, D.C. Thank you.
Wow. Definitely on point with today's topic. And what motivated you to choose Mary Terrell today?
You know, As I say every week, and I'm going to continue on that message, we need people that people just don't hear about a lot in the public or the news. Like, we all know about the top civil rights leaders. We all know about what they have accomplished. But we need to know about people who've actually pioneered. She's a pioneer of the women's rights movement. And it just correlates perfectly with today as well, when we're talking about politics and talking about voting and talking about people's right to vote. This right here, she fought for women's rights to vote. The law was passed in 1920 for women with the right to vote, but I don't believe it was just white women, I believe, at the time, had the right to vote. And, you know, she fought hard for that, and she was gratefully alive to see that being passed. And even she was so dedicated and so concerned about the problem that even at age 86 to 90 years old, she was still out there walking with picket signs, fighting for to end segregation and for laws to be put in place to help benefit the African American community.
Mm. Very good. And what else do you have for us today?
I have another diamond, and as I mentioned Wednesday, today's other diamond will be on Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory, by name of Richard Claxton Gregory, was born October 12, 1932 in St. Louis, Missouri. American comedian, civil rights activist, and spokesman for health issues, who became nationally recognized in the 1960s for a biting brand of comedy that attacked racial prejudice. By addressing his hard-hitting satire to white audiences, he gave a comedic voice to the rising civil rights movement. In the 1980s, his nutrition business venture targeted unhealthy diets of Black Americans. Reared in poverty in St. Louis, Gregory began working at an early age to help support his family. He was involved in sports and social causes in high school, and he entered Southern Illinois University on an athletic scholarship in 1951. Excelling as a middle-distance runner, he was named the university's outstanding student athlete in 1953. The same year, he left college to join the U.S. Army, where he hosted and performed comedy routines and military shows. After a brief return to his alma mater in 1955 and 1956, Gregory sought entrance to the national comedy circuit in Chicago. His breakthrough came in 1961, when a one-nighter at the Chicago's Playboy Club turned into a six-week stint that earned him a profile in Time magazine and a television appearance on the Jack Parr Show. In his numerous subsequent television, nightclub, and concert routines, he targeted poverty, segregation, and racial discrimination. Active in the civil rights movement, he participated in numerous demonstrations and was arrested for civil disobedience several times in 1963. He was jailed in Birmingham, Alabama. His activists spurred him to run for mayor of Chicago in 1966 and for president of the United States in 1968. In the early 1970s, Gregory abandoned comedy to focus on his political interests, which widened from race relations to include such issues as violence, world hunger, capital punishment, drug abuse, and poor health care. He generated particular attention for many hunger fads. At this time, he became a vegetarian, a marathon runner, and an expert on nutrition. He soon began a successful business to venture with his nutrition product, the Bohemian Diet. Around
Bohemian.
When he built Dick Gregory's Health Enterprises Incorporation. Through his company, he targeted the lower life expectancy of Black Americans, which he attributed to the poor nutrition and drug and alcohol abuse. Thank you.
Okay. Did you know that Dick Gregory was diagnosed with some type of cancer, something he was diagnosed with. I cannot remember specifically. And he decided not to take it. Yeah, it was, diagnosed with some form of cancer.
No, I'm going over here with the ladies in a minute.
He was diagnosed with some form of cancer, and they offered him chemotherapy. He turned down the chemotherapy and went on a diet and live a rightful old age. Did you know that, Walter? Did you see that in your research?
I didn't know, like, you added, of course, more information to my research of what I was reading, but, yeah, I know he was heavy on the nutrition side.
Right, right. No, I found that interesting. You know, when you say you're going to do a particular person, or thing, or whatever it is you do your research on, you know, I take a look behind the curtain. I look in the book. I kind of look things up, you know, to kind of see what I don't know. And for sure, it is a fact
that I know that there is a lot that I don't know. And so I make sure I try to keep myself well informed. Now, I want to go back to Mayor Wayne Smith. Mayor, what do you think about voting at the age of 16?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the dime can move. I think I'd like to talk about how something like that happens, because I remember at one point most things you weren't considered adult at one point in my early life until you were 21, and then that number evolved. I remember the movement to get to 18 and getting folks to agree that if you could go to the war at 18, then maybe you should be able to vote at 18. So as people mature, as society begins to think and these young people start to practice their advocacy and work on their parents and work on their families and their neighbors, then that issue can become a reality. I mean, we've seen a lot of things that we thought we'd never see in society in my lifetime, because people decided it was time that we see it. And so if these young people want to see that change, now we're not saying that's going to happen quickly, because the change from 21 to 18 didn't happen quickly, but it did happen. And so, you know, there's going to be a debate of whether or not people are mature enough at 16 to vote. But now here's some of the dynamics around that. If I were arguing the other way, I'd say, well, they allow you to drop out of school at 16. So, you know, they're saying that I guess you decided you got enough. Now, we all know that that's false, but they do. I think 16 is the age where you can drop out of school or drop out of school. So, you know, somebody's got to make a cogent argument on why that should be. And there are places around this discussion is already in the public atmosphere, because there are places around the country that this debate has already arisen. And so the question is, how does it get to scale? How do you take an idea that people are not considering, and how do you make it scalable? And so I think that's the lesson for some of our students at Quest Radio. How do you make an issue like that pop in society? You start talking to your city council people. You start talking to your state legislators. You start talking to your Congress people. And have other adults who may want to ally with young people. If we want people to get engaged, then maybe the earlier the better. That might be one argument for that. So let's see. I mean, I'm not opposed to it on initial reaction, but I would like to see the debate and why the pros and cons of voting at 16 and not. It'd be interesting, because as a consumer of education, if at 16, if you could vote, you could probably impact what happens in your schools in a way that nobody else could.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Walter, you brought up a good one. Mayor, what are your feelings, what are your thoughts about today's show and your participation and everybody else's? Give it to us.
Yeah, so I think it was great in this moment of Black Lives Matter. I thought the history lesson about Nina Simone was a great one, because it tied in culture to movement. A lot of times the things that society does is driven by what's in the cultural atmosphere. So Nina Simone becomes a significant figure because she gets people to think for her art form. And then this whole question about voting and whether or not we should participate, you know, leads to the next form of how do we move society to begin to service us better. And then to hear Walter talk about and give some feedback to those things and your input about apathy and just getting people to do the mail-in vote, those are the things that we have to do on the advocacy democracy side of trying to improve. Now, none of these are easy things to do. They're not going to change the world overnight, but if we don't do them, the world will never change.
You know what? Ma'am, thank you. God bless you. I'm indebted to you. I really appreciate your participation and your input and your insight to help us clarify what seemed to be, obviously something that we just couldn't comprehend, and you just broke it down in layman's terms. Mr. Harris, you have received some accolades, but when you put it all together and you have felt and I almost said seen, right, with your mind's eye, what do you think about today's show? And Walter, you're next.
It was very informative above everything else. You know, a lot of the stuff about the constitutional questions on the ballot, like they were saying, a lot of people don't know that you're not just voting for an individual. You know, so that was great information. And the idea of how you get the vote that Val was talking about, or how you get to register and stuff like that, you know, all this information is, and I think we need to stop preaching to the choir. We need to get this information out to the greater population so that they can kind of see what's going on out here. And Walter has always been on point with his diamonds. You know, I even learn something every week when I listen to him. So, you know, I really see that, you know, it was a good show. It was a good show, and we need you to, like, keep up the good work.
Okay. And I see you did use the word see, using your mind's eye there. Walter, sum it all up, man. Talk to me. What do you think about today's show, our honored guest? You kind of said some of the things, but do it for me one more time.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Harris, he kicked it off. Of course, he kicked it off great with his poems, and I just loved how he just does it every week. He presents it so well, and it just always has a deeper message. Like, you really have to, like, listen to it, and you have to, like, analyze different points in the poem to really understand what's going on and what's the message. And then, you know, the voting thing was great. You know, I want to thank the mayor for coming in, Mr. Wayne Smith, for coming in and giving more information to the audience, and also me information as somebody who will be voting in a couple years that I will need to know to be able to vote and do it properly and do it to the fullest, because a lot of people, they leave out things, you know, and they leave out important, like in the ballot, you know, they leave out important information that they just forget about, and they think, oh, you just need to vote for the president, and that's all. No, it's a whole longer process than that. And yeah, just want to thank you for that, and also my mom too.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. We have somebody on the line. Is that our guest from North Carolina on the line, 1421?
Yes, it is.
Please do us the honor, introduce yourself again for us.
My name is Colleen Rogers.
Okay. Calling in from North Carolina?
Yes, North Carolina.
Or should I say North Kakalaki?
Yeah, I used to live in New Jersey and New York.
Okay, all right. What city girl gone country, okay? All right.
City girl was always country.
I understand that. Well, you know, I want to thank Mayor Wayne Smith again. Our student host, Walter Pierce, we're creating something for the future with knowledge and information through him and his perspective as a young person. We love it. Shelton Harris, thank you so much. You're an integral part of this program, and you never knew that you would just, I guess when you came and became a part, you just thought you just be the person to play, you know, burn a few CDs for Mr. Bay. And now I got you right where I want you, right? Using your information and knowledge about music to share it with our community and our world. I want to thank everybody again on the line. And, you know, I'd like for you to say the best youth radio when I say Quest Youth Radio. So Quest Youth Radio is
the best
youth radio.
Okay, yeah, I dragged it out of you. Thank you so much, everybody. That's a wrap. And until next week, Wednesday, right? And I need to say we'll be back on the air after Labor Day at WSOU. Thank you very much, and peace.